Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome and happy Monday. Today's show is all about waking up and being the best we can do, being the best we can be. It's not about doing more. It's about being more. It's not about achieving more, but experiencing more. And it's not about working harder and longer, but working smarter. Coming up in the second half of today's show, the inefficiency assassin says we already have the most critical tool we need to successfully manage our life, and it's our brain. And training the brain is Helena Segura's forte, so we'll hear more on that in the second half of today's show. But first, we need to wake up, show up, and shine, says Cara Bradley. She's a former pro skater, a lifelong teacher, a mental strength coach, and the founder of Verge Yoga. She's also the author of On the Verge, Wake Up, Show Up, and Shine. Cara Bradley, welcome.
Thank you. Great to be here, Vicki.
I love the title of your book. But before we get into that, I just want to go back a year or two here to how things changed for you in your life, because you ran a final track race at college, and you said when you ran that race, you knew your life would never be the same. Tell us about that.
Oh, yes. It was a pivotal moment in my life when I was 19 years old, which was not just a couple of years ago, I must add.
You didn't have to say that.
Yes. What happened that day was that it was my last final track race, and I knew it, and I did something different. I went off on my own before my race, and I settled my mind. I didn't know I was doing it at the time, but I was saying a mantra in my head, personal best. Personal best. I ran the race of my life, and I remember vividly all of the details of that race. And what happened that day when I blew 6 seconds off my personal best was not just to say yay for me. I actually said, oh my gosh, I had all this in me my whole track career. What happened? How do I do it again? How do I do it in every area of my life? And that set me on a path of looking at practices, disciplines, ancient religions, modern religions. What are the sages saying? How do I learn to show up and shine like that all the time?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you know, 6 seconds is a huge amount to knock off your personal best in one, just one race there. But I wonder how many of us have that experience where we wait till the last minute, we put in a half attempt at something, and then we think, boy, we got good results from it, but what if I'd put, you know, all of my effort into this? You know, how great would those results have been? I can certainly relate to that. I've been in that situation a few times. And so this book really is all about stepping up to that place, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly, because what happened to me on the track that day happened by accident, like you said. It happens to people where all of a sudden you're doing something really well, and it's like, wow, if I had been doing this all along, I might be there instead of here. So my passion is in helping people recognize how to show up and shine, how to feel fully alive and tap into our natural intelligences, not by accident, but on purpose every day. Mm-hmm. How do we do this? How do we train ourselves to show up in those key moments, to recognize when we need to drop our minds and step beyond our fears? How do we stay awake enough to be able to really live on the verge all the time?
I want to read a quote that you put. It's towards the end of the book, actually, but I liked this a lot. The quote is, to really show up and shine, it's not enough just to be calm and clear. It requires action. You need to be in the world. And this is the bit I really liked. The missing ingredient for many is having the courage and confidence to lean into the edges of life. Tell us what you mean by lean into the edges of life.
Well, thank you for reading that because I have the chills.
Well, that's good if you got the chills from your own work.
I have the chills because I live this and breathe this all the time as a teacher, but also, more importantly, really, I'm practicing it in my own life. I believe that it's at those moments when we are leaning into uncomfortable and unfamiliar situations that we really truly wake up, which means to come out of the dream state of the thinking mind. We wake up to what's really happening right now. When we're able to continue to lean here and push there and just prod there and poke here in all of those little nooks and crannies that we don't necessarily want to do and go to in our lives, that's when we start to find the courage and we start to be uncomfortable being uncomfortable. And so, you know, so many people think, okay, I'm going to meditate, I'm going to get calm, I'm going to get blissed out. That's fine, but that will just kind of keep you blissed out for the rest of life. But it's using that natural state of clarity and then taking it into the world. And that's where we start to really, our practices come to life. And that's where we feel this incredible life force that moves through us all the time.
Yes, and here's the key, practices. You said a couple of times during that segment there, practice, I practice it, and these are practices. And that's the thing, I think, because I've been studying this myself for a long time too. When I was reading your book, I thought, yeah, I remember that feeling of feeling really alive, which tells me I'm not living to my fullest potential right now. You know, in certain aspects I may be, but other aspects not. And so it is a practice, and it is something we need to regroup on and come back to fairly frequently, I think.
Yes, we do. I'm such a huge fan of practices. And that doesn't mean that I'm super disciplined. I just believe that if I can do what is going to help me feel alive, help me feel vibrant, energized, peaceful, kind, confident, if I can recognize what do I do in my life that serves me, that makes me feel like I'm a part of this world and connecting with others, if I can recognize what those things are and then practice doing them,
so
then I'm cultivating those grounds as opposed to just feeding, you know, they say the hungry ghost, feeding the
yes.
the areas in our lives that bring us down, that block us, that make us feel depleted.
Right, right. So share with us, if you would, some of those things that make you feel that way.
So some of the practices that I offer in the book are really, really simple. Notice this moment. So it is a mindfulness practice, but it's a practice you can do right here. If you allow yourself the moment to pause and take five breaths or even a breath, right? Pause and take a breath and just notice where you are. Am I here? Or is my mind still on the email that needs to be sent? What is holding my mind? In the noticing, we actually arrive right here in this moment. So by just cultivating the capacity or the kind of the muscle to notice, when you're driving, notice, am I here? Am I here? I ask myself questions all day long. Am I here? Can I be kinder to myself right now? So it's not necessarily like a positive affirmation, you know, I am great.
Right.
It's more saying, can I just be a little more patient with myself during this traffic jam?
Right.
So if we can cultivate those practices, one of the things that I don't do is tell people what to do, because I really do trust that we all have the goodness and the intelligence within us to know what is going to best serve us. I can help direct you here. This may be helpful, this may be helpful, but at the end of the day, if you start to slow down and recognize what serves you, what doesn't, you're going to come up with your own set of tools. I really do believe that.
Right, right. Well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about natural stage. I want to talk about a couple of the gut checks that you include in the book, because these are all ways of checking in with ourselves. And you know, when you were talking about you ask yourself questions all day long, you call those notes to self. And I think that's definitely something I've started doing to myself as I go through my day after reading your book.
Oh, wonderful. wonderful.
So please stay with us. We are talking with Cara Bradley. Her book is called On the Verge, Wake Up, Show Up, and Shine. And who doesn't want to shine? All right, we'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. It's a beautiful morning. Feel the sunshine and pour your eyes. Wake up, it's a beautiful wake up. We want to be the very last time.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
All right, everybody in the car, let's go.
What are we going to do first when we get there, Mom? Go for a hike?
Sure.
What about canoeing? Can we go canoeing, too?
I don't see why.
How long does it take to get to the forest?
It's not that far, sweetie.
Are we there yet?
Yep, we're here.
Already?
It's a short drive from your neighborhood to your naturehood. Visit discovertheforest.org to find a neighborhood park or green space near you. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the U.S. Forest Service.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, London Times literary magazine editor James McManus returns. Exquisitely written and researched, his latest novel, Midnight in Berlin, is based on a true wartime story. Also, when journalist and fatherhood columnist Josh Leves was denied fair parental leave by his employer, he fought back and corporate America responded. Tune in to find out how. Join us every Monday live at noon Pacific time right here on Alternative Talk 1150 AM and find more than 300 podcasts at conversationslive.net.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Talk radio to brighten your day.
Get current weather, traffic, and news. Visit 1150kknw.com and stay informed with Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest is Cara Bradley. She's the author of On the Verge, Wake Up, Show Up, and Shine. And as a former pro skater, Cara, I'm imagining you've done a lot of work on psychological strengthening. Give us a couple of top tips, because I know anybody, even if they're really good at what they do, sometimes has self-doubt creep in. What do you recommend people do to assuage that?
Well, it's something I call fierce focus. And when I work with athletes, I use this terminology. I believe that when we practice, just like practicing kicking a soccer ball or practicing taking a free throw, when we can practice showing up in the center of the fire of competition, or you can say the center of an uncomfortable conversation or the center of a difficult conversation or meeting at work, if there's anything that you know that kind of makes you squirm and squeal and want to run away or want to constantly control, you want to identify those areas where you feel like you're shutting down. And then you go in and you study it and you practice it. And you sit with what makes you uncomfortable, and you really become familiar with how you operate there. When you can do that in a practice situation, for instance, it could be on during your run or during your yoga practice, or if it's a meditation practice, if there's anything that you do that can bring you into uncomfortable, squirmish types of situations, you can start to shift the way you live in those situations. And this is how I believe we cultivate that mental strength and composure.
And so let's talk about natural state, because you say when you show up in this moment, you meet your most authentic way of being you. This is your natural state. And years ago, I remember I took a very, very intensive questionnaire through Anthony Robbins' leadership when I was on a course, and they gave me back 30 pages of analysis on this. And one of the things that came up then, because I was in a whole different career field, was how much I had to compromise my natural personality to fit into that environment. And I think that's something many of us do, whether you want to call it compromise or just fitting in, I don't know. But talk to us a little bit about natural state, if you would.
That's a great way to put it. I really like that analogy. First, I just want to share with you that I also walked on hot coals with Anthony Robbins. That was a while ago as I continued my search for human potential, which is fantastic. But what I believe happens is we get caught up in what I call our busy mind. And our busy mind is a collection of thoughts, emotions, worries, fears, memories, forecasting, all this kind of junk mail that gets just that gets caught in our mind. Now, thoughts and emotions are part of life experiences. It's just when we cling and hold on to them that it does mute and distort how we show up in the world. If we're carrying around a projection of how we think we need to be for this meeting, our authentic natural self will be somewhat veiled by this anxiety over who we think we're supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
When we can let that go, when we can drop the luggage of all of these thoughts and emotions that are just not working for us, we slip into a very natural place where we feel awake and alive. This natural state, and it's been called so many different things over the ages. You can call it grace. You can call it true nature or consciousness, awareness. This natural state is a very ordinary way of living. So if you think about, you know, you're walking through a park or a wooded path, and all of a sudden you just feel a big breath come out, and you sense the sky, and you see how blue it is, and you hear the birds, and you feel the leaves underneath your feet. All of a sudden things get vivid. Your mind seems to quiet down, and you feel like you're just you. And it may just happen in a moment. This is what I call the verge. It may just be this one split second of time where you're between thoughts, or you're stable and settled and not being triggered emotionally. Well, it's beyond all of the things that we hold on to that we access our most ordinary, clear, energized, peaceful, compassionate state of being. We all have it.
Right, right. One of the things that I hear from people as they get older is, I wish I had been kinder. And you have a whole chapter on being kind. A lot of it is about being kind to yourself, because we are pretty unkind to ourselves, most of us. You say when you notice yourself being less than nice to yourself, you're going to offer yourself a small gesture of kindness, humor, or tenderness. Tell us how you handle that, because I'm sure you run into that too.
Oh, yes. I was the poster child for beating oneself up, let me tell you. And I didn't come to this notion of being kind to myself easily. I kind of came to it kicking and screaming, but I worked at it, and I started to notice how I was speaking to myself. One of the things I love is this idea of having a love object in your life. So I know it sounds completely corny, but having a love object, you can think of your pet, somebody else's pet, or a young child, a baby, a toddler, somebody that you have an uncomplicated relationship with.
Mm-hmm.
And you start to notice how you feel being with that person or pet, or even how you start to speak to your dog. How do you speak to your dog? If you can start to speak to yourself like you speak to your love object, it starts to shift the way you treat yourself. It starts to allow yourself to be more patient, kind, loving, giggly, human with yourself. And when that happens, it starts to shift the way you treat others. And I have to tell you, I am a testament to that, because it didn't come easily.
Right, right. And, you know, if we have, if we have regrets in life, which I think most of us do, if we're honest, it's important for us to let those go. So tell us how you would advise people to let go.
What happens when we hold on to anything that's not serving us anymore is it really truly blocks us from accessing that natural state, that aliveness. There is a piece of us that is just not present because we're clinging on to some past memory or betrayal. When we start to meet our mind, which is one of the Verge practices, which is a simple beginner meditation, when we start to look at the way thoughts are coming and going and start to develop a relationship with our thinking mind, in noticing, it starts to disintegrate. We start to notice, you know, I keep thinking about when so-and-so did that to me or when I didn't do this. I think about that 5 or 6 times a day. You know, how is this helping my life?
Mm-hmm.
So it's in meeting your mind and becoming familiar with your busy mind that what is not serving you truly starts to disintegrate and dissolve just by noticing. And this isn't something I made up. This is something that we have known through the ages and ages of contemplative practice.
One of those gut checks that I mentioned, you have gut checks throughout the book, is simply lightening up on yourself and figuring out what, you know, sometimes I talk with my mom and rant about something and she'd say, you need a good laugh. And she was always right, you know.
Well, yeah. So if we can identify, like I said, with the love object, like I know my little dog who passed away 2 weeks ago, still grieving, but my dog and I, he made me giggle. And I liked who I was with him. I was light and fun. And he taught me a lot about how to lighten up in other aspects of life. So again, it comes back to that noticing. We are all doing really, really well out there. And if we can allow ourselves to glimpse and experience and recognize the times when we are light, when we do giggle, and recognize that we still do have it in us, that, again, is we're just watering the seeds. We keep watering the seeds through this practice and noticing.
I love that. And thank you for saying we're all doing really well out there, because I think sometimes there's a tendency to think, you know, we're not good enough until we've improved in ABC area, whatever.
Yeah. I'll tell you, Vicki, that is really one of the reasons I wrote this book is because of my experience with teaching. I've been moving bodies for over 30 years, and I recognize how hard we are on ourselves. And when I move people in a yoga pose, you know, I tell them, this is a yoga pose. It's a physical movement pattern. There is no power over you. You do not have to achieve anything. When we can start to recognize that in a yoga pose or in a walk around the block and start to recognize that there's no better version of me, this, in this moment, if I show up for this yoga pose or this walk or this hug with my child as I am right now, that is the best I am in this moment. All of a sudden, we can recognize ourselves beyond all that striving and pushing and forcing. And that is liberation. That's the freedom that we're all seeking, in my opinion.
Yes. Well, the book is called On the Verge, Wake Up, Show Up, and Shine. I believe it comes out tomorrow.
Tomorrow is pub date, official pub date, yep.
Okay, so March 12th, tomorrow.
April.
Yes, April 12th. It's been a busy week. I was up till 3 a.m. doing taxes and stuff. Okay, so it's called On the Virtual Wake Up, Show Up, and Shine. A final thought you'd like our listeners to leave our listeners with, Cara?
What I'd like to say to everybody listening is that you are already awake and fully alive. You already have everything you need to show up and shine in life. And really, so often it's a matter of just allowing, slowing, pausing, and experiencing life right here and right now.
Excellent. Thank you so much for being with us. I do appreciate your time today and great work you're doing. The book again, On the Verge, Wake Up, Show Up and Shine, my guest, Cara Bradley. And you can find out more about Cara and the work she's doing at carabradley.net. And Cara is spelled C-A-R-A, Bradley.net. All right, please do stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicky St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicky partners with people just like you, at the exact level you need, whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicky today. Email Vicky at VickySt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicky and her work at VickySt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Anti-Icky Poo, the product that gets the stink out, we cover the world of animals. This week, April 17th, it's Harmonic Energy Shifting Sunday with Jude and Paul Ponton from Whispering Dragon in Seattle. They'll be in the studio with their Accutonic Forks, Tibetan Bowls and Bells, Pua, Didge, and Rattles, ready to do remote sessions for you, your animal friends, your home or business. Open phone lines throughout the show. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
Proud to bring variety to your radio dial. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. Well, in this segment, we're talking with Helene Segura. She is the inefficiency assassin. She's a sought-after productivity coach. She works with a wide variety of professionals and is the president of International Board of Certification for Professional Organizers. She's also a member of the National Speakers Association. And she's the author of The Inefficiency Assassin, Time Management Tactics for Working Smarter, Not Longer. But there's a very key difference between Helene's book and many other time management books out there. So we're going to talk about that today. Helene, welcome.
Thank you, Vicky. I'm excited to be here.
And we're excited to have you. So interesting book title. Let's talk about that first, The Inefficiency Assassin. Tell us about that, how that came about.
That came about because I went through a marketing class in which I was told the term productivity consultant is rather drab and boring. Could you spice up your job title? So after a few adult beverages with some friends, we came up with the fact that I help my clients slay wasted time. I'm really into spy movies and detective novels. And so all of a sudden, one of us said, hey, you are the inefficiency assassin. And so my title was born.
I like it. I like it. And one of the things that it differentiates your book, because I'm always looking for what differentiates this book from others. We've covered this subject, as I said, time management. We've covered energy management. But I always want to do it from a different angle, a different approach. You say the number one question you get asked is what about a product? is what's the best to use?
Right. What is the best app or what is the best calendar to use? And so many people want to be told what to buy in order to make their lives better, especially when it comes to time. And that's why initially they're a little disappointed with my answer when I say, you don't have to buy anything. You already possess the most important tool for time management, and that is your brain, because time management is all about mind management.
Right. And you specialize in helping people train their brains to be more efficient and to experience more, work smarter and not longer and harder. You also, in the book, you talk about, or you approach it from different ways of learning, which as a former instructional designer myself, I know is very important because people learn very, very differently.
They do. And it's hard to tell who exactly is going to pick up the book, and so that's why I made sure that no matter what your learning style is, you will be able to grasp the information in there. For instance, some of us learn best through stories. So each chapter starts off with a very brief story or scenario or case study. Other people just want a list to be, and they want to be told what to do, so you've got your tactics in there. Still others want to dive deeper because they realize if they understand the why behind those tactics and why those tactics work, they're going to be much more successful over time. And then, of course, everybody needs to do more than just read. I mean, it's great if you read the book, but then you want to implement. And the end of the chapter has the next step, so that way you can get started right away with your time management.
Right, right. And so, I read that you didn't necessarily have a particular interest in neuroscience or educational psychology, but you realized, which is true, that once you understand the basics, it really does help.
Yes. When I was in grad school, and I had struggled throughout my entire life with schooling, I was the kid who had to study so much harder than everybody else just to make grades. And in grad school, I had to take an educational psychology class and then also a class related to neuroscience. And all of a sudden, that just awakened my brain to how I've been fighting against my brain type the entire time. And that's where the struggle was. I was trying to think in a way that I was not programmed to think. So by figuring out what brain types are out there, I help my clients use their neuroscience that they already have inside of them. And instead of fighting it, let's say, this is who you are, and so this is what you need to do. So in that class, that's what awakened me to neuroscience and educational psychology. And why do things the hard way when there are some easy shortcuts you can take?
Right. You begin the book by saying it's all in your head. End the overwhelm by adjusting your mindset, something a lot of people find very difficult to do. You say that if we spend our days saying, I should spend time supporting my health or family or marriage or else I'll lose out. How do you respond to that?
Well, so many of us put work first, and obviously work is important because we need to have the job in order to pay the bills. And so we tend to get caught in this mindset of, what is one more thing that I can do for work? What is one more thing I can do to build my business? And then in the meantime, we end up losing out on special moments with our family because we worked late, or even if we're at home with our family, we're not mentally present with them because we're so focused on work. So what if we flip-flopped it, and instead of worrying about work, we worried about how can I support my family, my loved one, whatever relationships are important in your life? Because when you have your personal life squared away, it makes you a lot more productive at work.
It does. That's very true. So in the book, you cover a lot of different topics. I mean, you cover, everything from your workspace layout, assignment task and completion and time protection. But I want to focus on a couple of things from the section of the book that's called Situational Solutions. And number one is that I'd like to look at is, and you kind of touched on this a little, I've got brainless interrupters and ideas overload. Because I think we're all get so much sensory overload these days. And then when you work in a creative field or you work in a job, or you just want to improve things, you're constantly thinking about how that can happen. So you have this constant brain churn going on. And it can be really counterproductive at times. So tell us how you handle that kind of situation.
The first thing that we need to do is recognize that it's happening, because so many of us just wander around on autopilot all day long, and we're not really cognizant of what's going on around us. So once we become fully present with our environment and what's happening in front of us, that's when we start to realize, wow, all of these random thoughts and ideas are popping up into my head. And part of the reason why they keep popping up is because we don't have any kind of reliable system where we can capture the ideas. So that's where your brainless interruptive deflector shield comes in, because what you want to do is carry around that ideas capture tool. So if you're paper-oriented, you might have a small notebook, a small notepad that you carry around in your purse or in your pocket. If you're digitally inclined, then you have your device with you, most likely, throughout the day, so you can capture your ideas there. And so that way, you remove those ideas from your brain, you get them into a safe place, and that allows your brain to function more clearly throughout the day. And then eventually, once your brain realizes, hey, you've got this great place to store ideas, I don't have to keep spinning stuff out at you, your brain will start filtering only those great ideas instead of all of this noise and making you choose which are the great ideas. So that's really key, is catching yourself, realizing that you do have this going on, and then choosing a tool that you can use to capture those ideas.
Yes, important. I always used to carry a little, well, it's not little, it's actually quite large, sketchbook with me, but my black leather sketchbook. And I stopped, because it is kind of big, and I stopped carrying it with me. But about a month or two back, I started carrying it with me, because I find, like you said, if I get those ideas down, it's not taking up brain power. I'm not trying to remember them, you know. Otherwise, you focus on... I get great ideas in the shower, for example. So I keep a lipstick in the shower, and if I get an idea, I'll just scribble it on the shower wall, you know, because you think you're remembering, you don't, and it's taking up brain power trying to remember.
Oh, you're exactly right. And by the way, did you know that there is a special product you can buy? You can hang in your shower, so that way you can have your pen in there when you do think of those great ideas.
Oh, see, there you go. Well, I do like my lipstick. It makes me seem kind of crazy.
Okay. Stick to the lipstick.
So let's talk about something, again, from the Situational Solutions chapter, which happens to all of us. You know, we've got our day planned, our week planned, our month planned, whatever. We've got our schedules in place. And then something turns this all into a major tailspin. For me, for somebody like me, it would probably be a client calling with, you know, I need this turned around within 24 hours, because they have a crisis and their crisis then becomes your crisis. So how do you advise people to handle those kind of situations?
If it is a situation like you described, where it's somebody else putting their emergency on you, then part of what needs to happen is having a conversation with that person to determine, is it truly an emergency? So you can ask them questions about who is this going to affect and when do you need the answers by? And sometimes people think they have an emergency when it's truly not. So right. By pausing and not just jumping right away to say yes, by analyzing the situation, you might be able to help delay when the client needs to get that item. But if you can't, and let's say it is a true emergency, that's when you need to take a look at what your priorities were for the day. Now, so many people, they have a to-do list with 20 million things on there, and it's not humanly possible to even finish half of that during the day. So you want to start your day by understanding what your top three tasks are that need to get done. So if an emergency does come up, whether it's a person or technology or somebody throwing a wrench into your plans, you can focus back on those top three things, rearrange them while you're helping your client or another person with an emergency, and you can still get back on track. And that way, if you have to drop anything, you're dropping the lower hanging fruit and not the important things that still need to get done, even when there's an emergency.
Right. And just to continue that chain of thought there, there are many people who work today in high pressure environments where they are living on constant deadline and everything has to be done yesterday, but they may also have longer term projects. How do you advise people to still keep in touch with those longer term projects and make sure they get done? Because often they get shoved to the back burner and they may be really important, but there's no pressing deadline there.
Right. I've seen so many people know what their long term project deadline is, but they haven't broken down the steps, all the different things that they need to do to make that project happen. So what ends up happening is a night before or maybe 2 days before the project is due, they start spinning around saying, oh my goodness, I have this huge project due. Instead, what you want to do is break down all the different steps and assign mini deadlines to each one of those. So that way, if whether you have 3 days or 3 weeks or 3 months, you are breaking down the work into much smaller pieces. So whenever you have the chance to work on it, or if you have it scheduled into your calendar, you know what the next step is that you can work on, even when you have a whole bunch of craziness going on around you with other more pressing deadlines. You can keep track on this list of how much you've done on your project, and that way you can pace yourself so you're not rushing at the very end.
Right. We're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, I'm going to ask you about something that drives me nuts.
Okay.
We're talking with the Inefficiency Assassin, and that happens to be the name of her book. It's about time management tactics for working smarter, not longer. My guest is Helene Segura, and you are listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. So stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Looking for unconditional love, an exercise buddy, or a great listener? Paws has the dog or cat of your dreams, just waiting to meet you. We've made thousands of perfect matches since 1967, because everyone needs a warm, safe place to call home. Find out more today at paws.org or call 425-787-2500.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to, are you? Kids, work, listening to the radio. You're busy, which is great because busy people can't get prediabetes. Oh my, I read that wrong. They can. Should have worn my glasses. So visit doihaveprediabetes.org and take a short test, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, London Times literary magazine editor James McManus returns. Exquisitely written and researched, his latest novel, Midnight in Berlin, is based on a true wartime story. Also, when journalist and fatherhood columnist Josh Leves was denied fair parental leave by his employer, he fought back and corporate America responded. Tune in to find out how. Join us every Monday live at noon Pacific time right here on Alternative Talk 1150 AM. And find more than 300 podcasts at conversationslive.net.
Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair has a new Facebook page, so you can see what's happening on our show and what we're up to between shows. Like us on Facebook and look out for upcoming contest drawings.
Alternative to what? Alternative to everything else out there on the radio. Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
Don't you wonder sometimes about time to listen.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And we're talking about working smarter, not longer, in this segment with Helene Segura. Her book is The Inefficiency Assassin, and it's filled full of really great information, information that I haven't necessarily found in other productivity, time management, life management books. So those are the areas we're focusing on today. And Helene said at the beginning of the segment that the number one tool that we need for effective to be effective is our brain. And we already own that, hopefully we own it.
Yay!
we just have to learn to master it, right?
Exactly.
So I wanted to talk about something in here. I'm one of those people, it's annoying, but I'm one of those people who's always early. And I always have work with me because I'd rather get there and sit and do, you know, 20 minutes work or 30 minutes work than be right. rushed and showing up late. But I run into so many people who are late all the time. And it's not a problem, apparently. They've kept me waiting, you know, and because I'm 30 minutes early and then they show up 30 minutes late, that's an hour, you know, that's why I always take work with me. And then people who cancel meetings at the very last minute, you know, I mean, super last minute. And then those who don't even cancel them at all, they just don't show up. So when you're dealing with those kind of people, it drastically affects your productivity and effectiveness. What do we do?
There needs to be some kind of magic wand. No, just kidding. Some kind of negative consequence for somebody being late. Because if there is not a negative consequence, then chances are they're going to keep on doing it. So it really depends on what kind of relationship you have with this person who is always late. If it's a family member, you know, do you really want to create some kind of rift within the family because you complain to this person, hey, get your act together, you're always late? Instead, what you might want to do, and actually whether it's a family member or a colleague or a client, is let them know what the end time is for that luncheon or for that appointment. And that way they know that however late they want to be, that's going to be their choice, but you have a set end time, and that's all the time that you can give to them because you have other responsibilities throughout the day. If it's a client, you can send reminders. And within that reminder, also say, if there is any reason you need to reschedule, please let me know at least, and then give your deadline 48 hours before or 24 hours before so that I can, and then fill in the blank, so that I can book another client in your slot, so that I don't lose out on billable hours, or so, you know, whatever reason you want to give to share with that client, let them know. But if you set the expectations ahead of time that your time is important and I'm really going to enjoy my time with you and let's get so much done during this time that we have together, hopefully they're looking forward to it. And you're doing the exact right thing in bringing something to do with you. Even if you are meeting somebody who is always on time, you never know when somebody might get stuck in traffic. So by having something to work on, you're still getting ahead, even though the person you are supposed to meet might be running late.
Yes, I like the idea that you suggested about letting them know why they should let you know if they're going to cancel, you know, because it's going to impact your day, blah, blah, blah. Because I do seriously think that a lot of people just don't even, they don't go there. They don't even think, they think you're sitting painting your nails waiting for them or something. I don't know.
Well,
I don't.
Either that or they're so busy with what's going on in their life.
Absolutely.
And they're so overwhelmed that they don't stop to think about how it affects you. So with my clients, I'm very upfront when we start meeting. I say I rely on billable hours. So if you can't make it to an appointment, please let me know this far ahead of time so that way I can book somebody else. And in the last 10 years, I've had only maybe 3 or 4 people cancel in less than 24 hours, and that's because a child had to have an emergency appendectomy. Okay, we're going to let that one slide.
Right.
It's not like that happens all the time, but they understand because the expectation was set. And not in a mean way, but just in an understanding way, we have this agreement that our time is valuable.
Yes, I love it. I love it. So let's talk about the big P, procrastination.
Okay.
you say in the book, according to psychologists, and I so see this, according to psychologists, procrastination is the act of wanting to feel good now. It's basically the adult version of a 3-year-old's tantrum. I don't want to do it.
Exactly. Were you stomping your foot when you said that?
I remember a couple of years ago I was on something. Yes. I even stopped and thought, oh my God, I'm like a child. What's wrong with me?
No.
So let's talk about perfectionism and why we do this to ourselves. Procrastination and why we do this to ourselves.
Procrastination. And we can get to the other big P, perfectionism, right
after
this one.
That's part of, right?
Yes. Well, with procrastination, whatever is right in front of us, we are wanting to avoid because it's not fun, because it's a tough decision that we need to make. And when we go through our days on autopilot, we don't realize that we are procrastinating. So this goes back to mind management and being present and understanding where each one of your minutes during the day is going. So that way, when you feel procrastination coming on, you can stop yourself and say, wait a minute, if I procrastinate on this, how is this serving me? How is it going to make my life better if I put off working on this task or I put off making this decision? And so that will help combat a lot of procrastination. However, since we are human, it is human nature to want to procrastinate. So if you can't win that battle of the mind a few times during the day, then you can use a crutch, procrastinate productively. Instead of working on what's in front of you, since you want to run away from it, work on something else that will still get you ahead, just maybe not in the order that you thought you were going to work on things. So that's how you can battle through procrastination.
And so why do most people procrastinate? I can see, I know perfectionism is a big thing. We want things to be perfect, and if we can't do it perfect and we can't allow the perfect amount of time to make it perfect, we keep putting it off. What are some of the other reasons we often procrastinate?
It might be because we don't know how to do something. It could be because it's really, really super boring and we would rather go check Facebook or do something more fun or less taxing on the brain. So there are so many reasons why we run away from what's in front of us. It could be something that makes us sad, but it's still something that needs to get done. So once you realize that you're about to procrastinate, if you then ask yourself why you're doing this, it will help you avoid procrastination in the future.
Very good. Well, we're almost at the end of our segment, Helene. I know the title of the book is called The Inefficiency Assassin, Time Management Tactics for Working Smarter, Not Longer. What would you like to leave our listeners with today?
I would like everybody out there to know that you most likely aren't giving yourself credit for all the things you are doing. Everything that we talked about today has to do with what you're not doing here and what you're not doing there. But when we take the time to reflect, you're going to realize how much you do get done during the day. And this is another part of time management, is celebrating your wins. Celebrate everything that you do accomplish, because everybody out there does so much each and every day. And especially for women, we always tend to reflect on what we didn't get done. Let's reverse that. Let's first reflect on what we did get done, so that way we can celebrate it and be more positive.
I love it. I love it. Well, you're my second guest today. Both of my guests today have said we need to celebrate our wins, and that's something we all need to take to heart and listen to and start practicing on a daily basis. I really appreciate your time with us. Best website for listeners to find out more about you and the work you're doing, Helene?
They can go to theinefficiencyassassin.com, and everything you need to know about me is on that website.
Fabulous. Thank you so much for being with us.
And thanks, Vicki.
The book again, The Inefficiency Assassin, Helene Segura, my guest. And I want to thank each of you for spending this hour with us. I hope it was productive and you took something away from it. If you have questions, comments, feedback, I'd love to hear from you. You can reach me at info@conversationslive.net, info@conversationslive.net. You can also call me on the 800 number at 495-7617, 800-495-7617. And you can find me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair and on Facebook at Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. See you next week. Until then, live well, live strong.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.